This is Matt here with Brendan for another episode of our podcast.
Hello.
So today I think we want to tackle gaming in 2019. There's a lot to unpack there. We've seen...
It's only February,
but I think thinking of what everything that happened in 2018 and the quick explosion of, say, even like new business models, new opportunities growing in 2019. I mean, it's like just off and running starting in January. I can't probably like go through this podcast without mentioning Fortnite and things like Discord and Twitch.
I can challenge you to.
I think we can maybe put a bow on some of those things of why they're important, why they work together.
Yep.
And maybe just like a shift in culture like in gaming and like what we're seeing, like the entry point for younger people than ever before. Maybe there's like an unhealthy balance there. So maybe we start with this. Let's actually start with Fortnite because I think it has set up a lot of like new, you know, just opportunities for other companies. We've seen some copycat like games come out of what Fortnite built.
Have any of them succeeded at all?
They have. Apex Legends is one, and let's get to that in a little bit.
Okay.
Let's start by saying 2018, year of the World Cup. I don't know about you, but I saw a lot of goal dances that mimicked the Fortnite characters.
Yeah.
And that was really like the signal to me, like, this thing isn't only big, it is huge. I mean, there are now, like, you know, professional athletes playing the game, which we've always had in, like, esports and stuff, or I'll say, like, you know, maybe like a football game, people play Madden, right? The players themselves play Madden. What's different about Fortnite is, you know, the growth was just an explosion in 2018. It captured people, you know, from the ages of maybe like a 30-year-old NFL star to a 6-year-old who just got his first Nintendo Switch. And then later on, we even saw things like Marshmello, one of the biggest DJs in the world, performing a live concert in the game. And so I think the key takeaway for me was Fortnite is not just a game anymore. It is an experience. People are going there to hang out with their friends rather than hanging out with them in person.
Okay, couple things about this.
Yeah.
Absolutely one of those things that became a cultural sort of zeitgeist moment that I didn't expect or see coming.
Yeah.
I think the first time I ran across somebody doing one of those ridiculous dances was camping this past summer.
It wasn't your kids?
my kids are a little too young for this.
I'm sure they'll pick up on
but,
it.
But yeah, no, we were out at some campground and I see some kid doing this weird move with his arms back and forth
across his
body, and I'm like, what the hell are you doing? He's like, it's from Fortnite. I'm like, oh, very good. Some other thing I don't have any clue about.
Yeah.
But yeah, then it clearly took on much more of a storm. People are engaged in it, but this is clearly not the first time we've seen something come along that is the new massive engagement tech syndrome thing that goes away reasonably quickly after that. I think I saw an article this morning saying that the engagement article on Fortnite over the past month has dropped by like 40%.
It's true, yeah.
So, certainly interesting, but I'm not so concerned about the myopia of which actual game slash platform it is. I'm more interested in what this means about the way that we're engaging each other. So, you know, another one that I think is a kind of compelling example there is the Pokemon Go stuff, right?
Yeah.
Right. So, same idea.
Another fad, huge explosion, right?
Huge explosion.
News coverage was
insane when
it
was going on, but it was much more about how we as humans are connecting to each other through screens than it was about the particular application, I think. I want to know why something like Facebook appears to be stickier in nature as opposed to something that is gaming related, right? Because I think you see that. Facebook, their engagement levels over time stay reasonably consistent.
Yeah.
When it comes to the game stuff, if you look at that market sector, that industry as a whole, things come along out of nowhere, they spike massively. Then they drop down and go away until the next thing comes along and spikes. And I think that that's kind of the trend line that we see there.
And Fortnite was, you know, a culmination of, or maybe a copycat of PUBG.
Sure.
PlayerUnknown Battlegrounds, right? And so that game was definitely tailored more towards adults. Different mode, but I think overall that idea of having this battle map, you drop out of a plane or something, it's a free-for-all, 100 you know, people,
yep.
last man standing wins. Now we've seen Apex Legends, which is EA's competitor to Fortnite, launch by the end of 2018. And like you said, Fortnite, those numbers have dropped significantly.
Mm-hmm.
Just to give you a clue, in day 7 of Apex Legends launching, they achieved 25 million registered users. Fortnite didn't achieve that until, you know, week 7 or 8.
Mm-hmm.
But oh my god, right? Like, we're talking just, like, even higher growth. And I'm sure Apex Legends will just be another fad. Another year we'll be talking about another one.
So interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. If you look at what happened with the numbers there, so Fortnite, arguably, in the way that it does things, was the first one to enter that kind of market with its particular spin on things,
mm-hmm.
then Apex comes along and does their thing with it. But you've got more people who immediately jump from the Fortnite thing into the Apex Legends thing because
right.
it's already a proven paradigm,
yeah.
right? And
yeah.
now you're trying to become a first entrant into the proven paradigm.
And Fortnite was sticky to that point about Facebook. It was sticky for longer than I thought it really could be, considering it was just kind of like a kid-friendly ripoff of PUBG.
Yeah, but a year isn't sticky.
A year isn't sticky, and it's really hard to see a lot of games be sticky outside of maybe like the Nintendo brand or something, and we can
and
we'll
even,
table
even
that
then,
for now. But
even
like,
then, I
yeah.
would say that's a brand thing, that's not a game thing.
Yeah,
right.
Right.
Where I was going with that was the jump in kind of that game sector from one game to the next one to the next one
mm-hmm.
seems to work to pull users of a previous game into the next one to keep them engaged, but in a new vertical. We don't see the same thing in social, which I think is a weird inversion.
Yeah.
I don't understand the inversion between the way social networks operate and the way that game communities and networks operate.
Mm-hmm.
So if you take Facebook versus Mastodon, for example,
yeah.
it's the same thing. Facebook has got consistent engagement. Mastodon came in there. You would think someone would be like, oh, this is great. I can be, you know, one of the ones leading the charge there, and it would start to siphon off a whole lot more. A lot more user share, and that just simply has not been the case.
Yeah.
So
what has stuck, though, and maybe this is our shift to those more social platforms,
yep.
Things like Twitch and Discord.
Mm-hmm.
So I was very surprised to see Discord become sort of the de facto choice of playing games with your friend, the communication base for playing games with your friend, whether
mm-hmm.
it's the mobile app or the actual chat. It just gives you a lot of different ways to kind of hop in that chat room and just communicate with your friends or convince your other friends in certain groups to play a certain game with you at, you know, 11 o'clock, whatever time it was. I think the Discord stuff will stick while those games continue to change, right?
It's
so we're going to see
what IRC was back in the day.
Yeah.
I mean, back when we were doing, like, these Call of Duty LAN parties, like, that was
yeah.
that was what you were using
right.
stuff like IRC for. What's fun about this is people talking about this like it's new.
Right.
This is not new.
Right.
Like I was doing this kind
it's
of
just
foolishness.
More accessible, right?
Well, it's more accessible and it's mobile friendly now,
right?
Right, which it wasn't before. Before, if you wanted to put together some sort of gaming party with your friends, it was let me go and pick up my tower and my monitor and a giant Switch and go to somebody's basement and then kind of do it that way because of the latency stuff. Nowadays, I think you've got higher connectivity, you've got miniaturized computing, and it just, you throw the mobile aspect on top of it, it increases the accessibility. What's interesting about that is perhaps the increase in accessibility actually shortens the cycle times on its day in the sun, shall we say, its
yeah.
usefulness. I remember Call of Duty, when it first came out, like, that was a long time that we would stick in that. It wasn't like a year
oh,
flash
yeah.
in the pan thing.
Right.
But it was harder to get engaged into it.
Yeah, I don't think I was even playing the... Like, I had Call of Duty maybe like 2 or 3,
yep.
and that's when the online stuff started getting pretty attractive and pretty addicting as someone in, like, I think I was in like middle school or high school at the time. And so that quickly became the, you know, you go home from school, everyone's on around 7 or 8 o'clock, homework's done, sports are done, like, whatever it is. Mom, can I play for an hour? That was it. And it didn't matter, I guess, like, how great the communication was even. It was really just, like, it's all you had.
Right.
Everyone had an Xbox or a PlayStation, and those were sort of the friend. You know, I remember a lot of my friends had PlayStation, and I didn't. I had Xbox. So I was playing the Call of Duty online game with people I didn't even necessarily hang out with in the real life, but that's the one I had, and so I made friends that way at the time. And I've even probably seen it go as far to, we now see people exclusively have friends online in that gaming community. Probably a bad thing that they're, you know, not getting out maybe as much as they should, but, you know, maybe that opportunity wasn't there before for a lot of those people who just felt isolated. They're gamers, they're hackers. They just maybe never really, like, found their crowd in high school, and now it's, like, it's interesting to see it flip where you're an outlier if you don't play Fortnite and if you don't have the custom-built PC and play with, you know, League of Legends with your friends.
Yeah.
I think that's a really interesting flip that we're starting to see, you know.
It's been weird.
There's a balance, right?
Well, it's a balance, but it's been weird to live through that flippening, as it were, right? So, you're exactly right. Back in the day, the people who were locked into their screens all day, every day, were weirdos. Like, strange. I wasn't one of them. I was in tech, but I wasn't one of them. I was like, you guys got something wrong. You need to, like, go and get a hobby or find a girl or something. That seems to have, in the past, like, 20 years or so, done this weird role reversal where now it's sort of expected.
Like, yeah.
I don't know. I look at this now from the standpoint of watching how my kids interact with technology and screen time, and I'm pretty worried about it. Like,
And how old are they, just for context?
6 and 4.
Okay.
Yeah. Pretty worried about it, because you can tell the behavioral shift. So they're fine. Give them a screen for a while, and it's like watching, like, a being transform from one thing into another. The eyes glaze over, they're just locked into it. You can have entire conversations with them. Gone. Nothing. And then when you try to take it away, it's like somebody coming off of a heroin addiction. I've never seen anything like it.
Yeah.
Mood swings, screaming and crying, this isn't fair, yada, yada, yada. Again, they're kids, I get that.
Right.
But there's something highly maladaptive about the way that I think we interact with technology nowadays, and gaming is just the first entrant into that, versus, I think, how we as a species evolved. I'm still trying to unwrap what that all means, but I see it with my kids, and it scares the hell out of me, because this stuff isn't going away. We're not going back to the days of doing agrarian farmers.
Yeah. I have a little cousin at a similar age, around 6.
Yeah.
And when I go over, you know, my aunt and uncle's house, he can navigate Netflix probably better than I can. He can play mostly iPad games he has quite well.
Yeah.
You know, he it's incredible how quickly he's been able to not just, like, learn how it works, but actually perform at a high level, like, on some of these tasks that, you know, I guess it's just, like, I would never think it'd be easy for a 6-year-old to figure out an app, per se, right?
Sure.
They can't write in cursive yet. They, you know, they don't even have a great vocabulary, but they can figure out how these algorithms work in their head. It's almost like this reverse math, like, it's very, very strange, right?
They
can't read at a, you know, at a fifth grade level, but they can probably start plugging and playing with an app to make a song or make, you know,
their
project together.
It's that nativism thing that you hear about. And, I mean, it was always the funny thing, like, with, oh, need to teach grandpa how to use it. We're not really that old, and suddenly we're sitting here going, they just understand this so much more efficiently than we do.
Yeah.
It's magnitudes different from when it was, like, dealing with grandpa who grew up maybe not with a car.
Yeah.
To having to figure out how some of this stuff works.
No television, let's say, and they have an iPad now, and they're FaceTiming with their family. Yeah. Who would have thought?
But we grew up relatively natively with what the technology is, and even we're looking at the generation or two behind us going,
Yeah, or in our cases, working on the technology hands-on.
Yeah.
So we think, we understand the ins and outs. There's no way a child could.
Which is clearly not true.
Yeah.
I was talking to somebody the other day about this, and it was a weird realization that I had. I talk about the negatives, like the downsides of, oh, the attention gets lost, and you're not getting out and interacting with the normal world, or the natural world anyway. But there's a flip side of this coin, where I am positive that my daughter at 6 has got 10, 20 times the information about the world and knowledge inside of her brain than I ever could have conceived of having at that point.
Mm.
She may not know how to allocate on that, she may not know how to use it, but she's got a lot more in there than I had growing up. Again, a lot of this is just questions. I don't know what this means as we go forward in the world, but I know it's fundamentally shifting what the human animal is into whatever it's about to become. And I don't think we're designed for it.
Yeah, right. To me, it's kind of crazy to see, like, Olympic stadiums selling out for League of Legends, you know, tournaments. But I'm not sure it's actually that much different than regular sports either, because there are humongous endorsements going to even, like, athletes and celebrities to play these games as a first entrant point. You know, to go back to Apex Legends real quick, why was that so popular to start with? They got a popular, you know, very experienced gamer named Shroud to start streaming on Twitch Apex Legends day one. He's got a huge following, right? Just like Ninja had in Fortnite. Everyone's going to say, what's that game? What is he playing? I think that's the one I need.
What is it about watching other normal people do things that you can do that you're interested in as opposed to doing yourself? Like, previously when we were watching sports, it was because you've got people who are gifted with, and certainly they've worked very hard, but they've got natural gifts in a certain domain.
Expert in their craft.
Absolutely exceed what 98% of the rest of humanity could ever hope to do. That's really not the case with, I think, the gaming stuff.
Again,
some people have faster coordination and whatnot,
right.
But it's not a 2% of the population that can do it. It's like a 50 or 60%. It's a much bigger if they just did more of it. Marry that up with, like, my kids love these YouTube videos about people just doing the most mundane foolishness.
Like Dude Perfect, like launching stuff off buildings and
like look at me, I've got a new toy. I'm going to open the toy and see what is inside the toy. I'm like, you've got the same thing in the other room. Go open your own fucking
I've
toy.
Seen
I don't
that
understand
trend.
This.
I've seen that trend with the youth that YouTube is incredibly addicting. The next video is already loading up something
it's
that
not
is
just
predicting
the,
what
it's
you want
not
to watch.
Just the videos are addicting, but they're videos about stupid shit.
Yeah.
Like mundane, completely within your wheelhouse. To take your face off the screen and go do what you're watching right now somewhere else. And yet, addicted to it.
Maybe that's a bigger...
Totally addicted to it.
Maybe that's a bigger trend that we're seeing with not just, you know, watching YouTube videos. We're seeing it in gaming. People don't mind sitting down for an hour or two. It's not me, but people don't mind watching someone stream their broadcast, watching the expert at their craft playing a video game. Personally, I'd love to just play the game with my friends.
Right.
I think that's what most people do, but they're still drawn back to, oh man, I gotta watch like an hour of how this guy does it. I'm not sure you're really gaining a lot doing that. There's ad sponsors, it's an entertainment play. Podcasts, like this very one, is also something I never thought people would not pay for, but continually listen to on a regular basis to just hear people talk. Now, what's different about podcasts is there's content there. There's experts who are giving you new insights to your work, to culture, to relationships, whatever that is. I learn something every day, every time I listen to a podcast.
Right.
Something new.
Right. So
am I learning something from the YouTube video? Probably not.
Maybe
not.
Not maybe
yeah.
So. I mean, maybe there's a skill that you're picking up that we're just not aware of. But think of, I think we've gotten to a point where this has become so easy to be spectators and to not be participants in life, wherever it may be, especially in an online variety. You know, you talk about us with the podcast. Like, I was just thinking about that exactly. This is not hard to do. It took us a year or more talking about it before we actually just said, why don't we just put down a microphone and kind of record a conversation, hit the button, record. There's nothing hard to this. This is participating. And the thing that is more rewarding for me anyway is listening back to these conversations after we record them and saying, you know what? That's awesome. Like, we did that.
Yeah.
People may listen, people may not listen. I don't really care. We're getting on the field and we're doing something.
Yeah.
As opposed to just listening to somebody else doing it for us. And I'll tell you what, the benefit to me has been my thoughts around these subjects become sharper and they become clearer, and I'm able to, in everyday conversations, much more better. How about that?
Write it in speech, right? Yeah, I think those are the two...
Much more definitely allocute on what I'm thinking.
Those are the two skills that podcasting has brought joy to me, right? You know, I try to write about these things in Medium posts sometimes, or just talking them out loud with you gets us down. Kind of just helps me frame these things in a way. Say, oh, that's why it makes sense. Those are kind of the key points to pull out of that new idea or that new takeaway.
Right.
To get back onto the gaming track, I do want to talk a little bit about consoles. And I want to start with the Nintendo Switch, because I do have one. I've had one for about 8 months. And
I've got one, too. It's great.
You do have one. Okay.
It's great.
And so let's talk about what's great about it. And, you know, I think it really is a console for everyone. We've seen things like Xbox and PlayStation really stick to the sports games, the shooting games. They have really big engines, a lot of money thrown at games like Apex Legends, like we mentioned earlier, that are going to have those huge returns. That, you know, they're just a monopoly of that business in a certain way. With Nintendo, it amazes me, first, just how they've been able to recreate themselves every couple years and launch something like that not only their old followers had and loved, but still the kids as well. And so what I'll say is the Nintendo Switch is affordable. It is super portable. It's killer for travel. I've loved it, taking it on planes. It captures that audience of both, like, the youth and the older folks who grew up with those same brand titles like we mentioned earlier.
Yep.
My favorite game, maybe a few of my favorite games, like Mario Odyssey, or a reboot of probably, like, you could even say the original Mario, right? Zelda, Breath of the Wild.
It is amazing.
It's amazing.
It's amazing.
And the Joy-Con controllers are basically just, like, shrunk down Wii controllers with just even, like, better accelerometers, better tech in them. That, to me, is, like, absolutely amazing. And there's just, it's so much fun, right? You can break that thing apart, make it into two controllers, play with some family members. I mean, I guess how I use it is probably a little different how, like, you and your family use it, but
yeah, so
I think it's amazing that I can use it as an adult for, like, an RPG game, and then you can use it, say, this is also absolutely fine that a six-year-old plays, you know, Mario Kart Racing, and it's a fun, cool, like, no violence game.
Right.
We all love it. Yeah.
So I think the flexibility of that platform is, bar none, one of the things that makes it just so incredible. We primarily have it attached to the cradle and on the TV at the house so that we kind of, as a family, can get around it and play it.
Yeah.
What I love is being able to play the characters and the games that, like, I played as a kid with my kids.
Right.
And they're like, this is great. And I'm like, you have no idea how great this is.
You don't even know half of them,
not
right?
Not being, like, an 8-bit. It's so much better not an 8-bit. It's good.
But all those 8-bit NES games were also released if you bought online for the Switch.
Yeah, I know. I know.
That was 20 or 30 titles. I'm just like, I just have these now? Like, thank you for $20 for a year.
It's great.
Good deal.
It's great. It's so cool. I think, you know, Nintendo's interesting in that gaming world, because they're almost to me the Apple of the game console kind of area, right? So Apple, I remember when I was a kid, the 2E, I loved it, and it kind of it grew with me through life, and it was always, you always knew kind of what you were getting. There was something wholesome about always being able to go back and go like, hey, I know you guys, like, got it. You've kind of been a partner that's walked along. Mm-hmm. I feel the same way about like Nintendo and their stuff. Like, you're the controllers haven't fundamentally changed their function since I was 4 or 8 or whatever it was. And they're characters you love. You get to do them again with a new generation, but it's better now than it was then. The storytelling is better. The immersiveness is better. The expansiveness of the games are better.
Yeah. It's very creative. Some of those games are played. Oh, yeah. And like, you could take Zelda for example, or even Mario. I know in Mario Odyssey, you know, you throw your hat as your way to basically fight in that game and do different tricks. But the little things that really get me in that game is like, you can enter a tunnel, and now you're playing 8-bit Mario. This is in Odyssey.
Yeah, yeah.
You're in the 3D world. It's great. You're having fun. You enter a tunnel. You play an 8-bit, you know, old school Mario game, and then you exit the tunnel, and you're back in 3D world.
Right.
The way that like the camera moves through that experience, the way that game actually works, and the lives you have in it, it's like incredible. They've shrunk that down and said like, "Hey guys, like flashback, this is awesome."
Yeah.
You know?
So I mean, the technology piece of it is amazing. The storytelling pieces of these things are just incredible. The open world aspect, like Zelda, Breath of the Wild, is just wacky.
And it's not even
wacky.
4K, right?
No,
that's the other thing. It doesn't need to be, because the experience and the design and the gameplay is so smooth. You really just feel like that open world is like an endless, you know, possibility to explore.
Well, yeah, and we're looking at games or gaming as though they're just a technology thing, but when you take on something that is like Breath of the Wild, that is that immersive, I mean, it goes to storytelling, it goes to architecture, it goes to gameplay, it goes to engagement, it goes to family dynamics, go up and down the thing. It is the most interesting sort of movie experience that can go on for months at a time continuously.
Yeah.
And it's wild. It's wild.
It's hard to explain, right? Yeah. And I think I've probably put down like 60 hours into that and beat it.
Oh, easy.
And I'm like, you know what? There's probably another 60 hours in this to do the side quests.
Unlimited,
yeah. Right? And it's just so much fun picking arrows, you know, making your own food, like little things like that.
Yep.
Another really cool thing about the Switch, you know, a YouTube app came to it. I think we're going to start seeing a lot more apps, maybe like Netflix, come to the Switch. Now we're entering.
Did you see the guy who hacked the Android onto the Switch this week?
I did not.
This is a crazy story about some guy who was like, I think I can put Android on this Nintendo Switch, and
he did.
which just goes to show you, I mean, Android's reasonably lightweight anyway, but when it comes down to it, you're not dealing with just a gaming platform. This is a full-bore computing platform. And the intersection between gaming and computing platforms now, I think we're reaching that inflection point.
Yeah.
So the Xbox, for example, you could turn that into something that was running the Play Store or whatever else it might be and get a full app experience on there that runs on the TV.
Yeah.
I think we're going to see that happen more and more. I think we're going to start seeing.
But the Switch has never, Nintendo's never played in that space.
No.
And so I think it's interesting that they could say, you know what, even the lightweight version of that is could be easy for us to do.
Sure.
And give you really like 90% of what you need as far as like entertainment, you know, outside of gaming.
Well, I mean, let's face the facts though. There's an economic reason to do that too.
Yeah.
There's only so many ports on the back of a television. So if you're looking at that and you're like, well, I got my cable box on there and I can either put a Switch or I can put a Chromecast, but I need that because I'm looking to do streaming of X, Y, Z, and Q. Well, you want to be able to have people do the streaming on the same device so they don't have to buy multiples, which will incent them to buy your device instead because it's got more capability.
I think I would be remiss without mentioning the president, the former Nintendo of America president, Reggie Phil's aim. He's retired, and he has been replaced with no other than Doug Bowser.
Really?
You can make this stuff up, right?
I love it.
There's been some hilarious memes, if you
the
haven't
world,
seen them, of
the world's a simulation,
corporate
man.
Bowser, you know, screaming at Mario, Peach, and Luigi in a boardroom, because their revenues don't look good enough. So it's really come full circle. Last thing to touch on, mobile gaming. Why does it suck? That's where I'm at with that experience. I think there's a lot of different mobile games out there. They've never captured me for more than, a few months, maybe. Things like Clash of Clans was interesting. This idea of, building up a empire, joining a clan and doing raids with your friends. Really cool idea. But overall, and I know Fortnite, ended up launching a mobile version as well. But overall, I think what we saw a lot of people the last 3 to 5 years talk about, bigger screens, more processing power in phones, these are going to be ripe for video gaming on your phone. I think we've pretty much just seen the opposite.
I'm going to tell you why. I think I know exactly
go,
why.
Go for it.
So the reason the Switch works as a mobile gaming platform and phones don't is because you don't put your hands on the Switch.
Exactly.
Your hands stay on the controllers on the side, and you can see the environment that you're trying to interact with that. It's the same thing with the iPad. If I try to use the iPad with the keyboard attached to it, but I still have to use my finger as the mouse to interact with things, it sucks.
Yeah.
It sucks. You want to be able to see the surface that you're trying to interact with, but not actually have to put your hands on it to interact with it. That's why mobile gaming on cell phones is bollocks. No good.
Yeah.
No good.
No games have pulled you in or your kids in the, I feel like the kids' games are very basic. Keep them busy for half an hour.
Yeah, like Candy Crush stuff, sure.
Right.
Fine. But if you're talking about something that's an immersive game that you're going to play in, not really.
Do you think there's any headwinds coming for that? Or, in my opinion, we're probably still pretty far off from that being an experience that's, meaningful, in a game. You did mention Pokemon Go. That's actually a great example of, not only fantastic AR, but a mobile gaming experience that
worked and was also
social. We just haven't seen anything else. And I think if it didn't have the Pokemon name to it, there's no way it would have really caught on.
I agree.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. I think that does it for us. Thanks again, everyone, for listening.
Thanks, guys.